This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, political roundup for this week. Lots of stuff happening. Our A team is therefore here. Chuck Coughlin, Tom Ryan, welcome back to the show. We have an interesting wrinkle on today's show that we're going to play a little game here. You guys remember Groucho Marx and his afternoon show in the early days?
Yeah, word of the day.
That's the word of the day. The magic word. And when you
down came the duck.
This was the early days of television, and the production value was very minimalist. But you got Groucho, and he would bring on this pair of people and basically ask questions that would embarrass them in ways that I think made the audience feel uncomfortable, and it made it edgy. But they told the audience in advance what the magic words were. And the duck comes down. We have three magic words today.
All right.
There's no duck, but there will be a music record. Now, when I say the rules are, if I say the word, it doesn't count. It's only you guys. The words will come up. I guarantee it.
Tom and I are quaking over here.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure.
All right.
Chagrin.
Question number one. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam and our own Representative David Stringer. Background, just in case somebody's been in a cave. The Virginia governor was caught with a photo in his medical school yearbook of a Klansman in a blackface picture.
Which he claims now is not him.
He's waffled on that. Yeah. Our own Representative Stringer, I quote, this is his quote, "African Americans and other racial groups don't blend in. After coming to the United States, unlike immigrants of European descent, they, quote, always look different." Another time he's talked about there weren't enough white kids to go around in the state public schools, called immigration an existential threat to the country. Okay, guys, compare and contrast.
I'll take a quick run at it. First off,
my guest.
Governor Northam is a Democrat. And so the Democrats have been doing their best to distance themselves from the problem of racism in America. And here we have Northam saying, "I'm not leaving," after, as you correctly identified, here he is, a full-grown adult, and he's still doing blackface and putting pictures of the KKK or dressing up like the KKK in his yearbook.
Or associated with it or something.
He needs to go. And his whole party is saying, get out of here. The lieutenant governor is also a Democrat, so they would have a Democrat still control the governor's house in Virginia.
An African-American Democrat.
Mr. Fairfax. Now, the Stringer issue is Representative Stringer is a Republican representative from Prescott here in the state of Arizona. One bit of history about Prescott: the KKK used to be very strong in the streets of Prescott. I tweeted out a few weeks ago, when the whole Stringer episode first started, pictures of the KKK after they strung up four Chinese immigrants for a suspected murder. The problem is with Mr. Stringer, although there were some tepid calls for him to resign, it wasn't until this week when the Phoenix New Times reported that he also had a criminal history of possessing child pornography and being a John in a prostitution
case. The details
case.
Of which are sketchy because evidently they can't find the documents.
Well, here's the thought, though. Representative Stringer can certainly sign. They found documents. They just can't get the whole set.
Can't get the release.
So Representative Stringer.
I think the other thing is his record was supposed to have been expunged.
Correct. Well,
that's a legal exoneration. It's legally off the books, but obviously, it still happened.
The paperwork's still there. And so what Representative Stringer could do to put it all to rest, if he's telling the truth, is sign the release for the records back in the city of Baltimore and sign the release for the records for the sex abuse therapy program that he attended, and then we can all see.
Question to Chuck. It seems to me The Democrats are quicker on the trigger about this. The calls for the governor's resignation were very, very quick and almost universal.
Well, the political culture of intolerance is running at an all-time high. You know, it was it's been on the rise for some time. It birthed into a new world in the Trump administration and the social media birth culture time. It's man's sin, right? It's the original one, and everybody is quick to draw and quick to conclude. I diverge from my colleague's opinion here on the governor of Virginia. I think we should get to the facts of it, and find out really what the truth is. But you know, if we're all going to be judged by that standard, I don't know who's going to be left to sit in the seat anymore. I mean, the lieutenant governor's purported to have a sexual abuse allegation lodged against him. I mean, at some point in time, the word grace needs to be reentered into our political lexicon and say, you know, at what point do we give, you know, it used to be the story of American politics was full of second chances. We're not giving people a tweet right now. You got to go. With regards to Mr. Stringer, Tom outlined that very well. He's now the subject of an ethics committee inquiry in the House of Representatives. They hired counsel yesterday or this past week to investigate these claims. Tom's absolutely right. He will have an opportunity to divulge. I've talked to public defenders on this issue who had a really interesting take because they think differently than all of us. They're like the one gentleman who I respect greatly said, you know, there's a reason that the prosecutor in Baltimore gave him a misdemeanor here and then agreed to expunge the record after a period of time. The purported argument from the public defender is you don't have a case. And your defense, Tom would know this, you go to trial, you got your lawyer says, I got 90% chance that I'm getting you off. There's a 10% chance you're going away for a long time. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
And so, you know, he clearly took this path. I'm not judging I don't know enough to judge that now. What we talked about with regards to his racially insensitive remarks, you know, he's got a history of that. And that's a problem. That's a problem for the caucus, for Mr. Bowers, the Speaker of the House. It's a problem which, at least in the way that he sees minority cultures. You're different. Well, yeah, we're all different. That's how God created us, right? And
the other problem he has in terms of sort of the Republican caucus is that he was renominated and reelected after most all of that stuff was.
Yeah, and I made the comment in the paper that in parts of that district, as Tom well pointed out, those kind of comments probably help you in a Republican primary.
I will point out that somebody in Prescott has taken out recall forms to create the committee to start a recall process.
Mm-hmm.
I was involved in a recall with Senator Russell Pierce. I was the attorney for the recall movement. It can be done. It takes a lot of effort. And Stringer doesn't have the same backing that Russell Pierce did back when he was recalled from the Senate.
Well, so, I think Ethics Committee in the legislature will probably be
That's going to be the slow train. The quicker train, if they want to go pull petition or pull
you think
recall.
That's quicker?
It could potentially be quicker because you actually set the environment that the Ethics Committee then is playing out in. And the Ethics Committee could come with its conclusions while that is being played out.
You know, I want to conclude this segment with one personal observation on this type of thing in general.
Yeah.
I think that we have become too focused on did somebody once say the wrong word or take the wrong picture or something like that, as opposed to what is the pattern of activity throughout your life. And I don't think applying the latter standard, it doesn't come out. It's not an exoneration for having done something you shouldn't have done. But if it was a long time ago, I would say you look at the rest of somebody's life.
Life's work.
And that we are much more, did he say?
I mean, this governor in Virginia was elected by widespread margins not many months ago.
Context, you know, nobody used the N-word more than Lyndon Johnson.
Yeah.
And nobody did more for American civil rights than Lyndon Johnson.
Right. And the in the environment we live in today, you know, the good book says there are no man is righteous, right? And so we all fall short. And how we handle that, that's become the issue, is how we as a culture handle people's shortcomings. As you say, look at the body of work, look at the whole thing, and then put it into some context.
It's easy to lose subtlety when
one egregious error. I'm not minimizing the blackface in 1984. I graduated from college in 1984.
1984 is not ancient history.
No, it's not ancient. Yeah, I don't feel that way right now. I don't think I would have been dancing around in a minstrel outfit in 1984.
I would point out that Robert Carlyle Byrd, senator from West Virginia, who served it for a long time, was an actual officer, national officer in the Ku Klux Klan, and ended up being one of the most liberal senators in American history, I think.
Yeah. It's tough when in the Twitter, you know, Facebook, social media, 24-hour news cycle culture for anybody.
Well, Robert Byrd, I don't think would survive today.
No.
We will be back. Another topic. We're going to be talking about Mr. Mueller, Mr. Stone, and Nancy Pelosi when we return.
Sounds
in
like
the
a rock
think
band.
Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, we're back with Chuck Coughlin, Tom Ryan. You missed, by the way, folks, all the best stuff occurs during the commercials, but you're never going to find out what that was. We'll bring these spies back again. Okay, Robert Mueller leaving no stone unturned. Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, quote, "This has nothing to do with the president," unquote. Chuck.
Well, I said at the end of last year this was going to blossom. It's beginning to blossom.
Drip, drip, drip.
Yeah, and what I think we're getting here is he's beginning to subpoena the inaugural records. He's getting into all the tax return forms. He's getting into all the business relationships. I think what we're going to see here is an unarguable business connection with the president that's not heretofore been disclosed. And a business relationship that may in some instances have clouded his judgment as it relates to this current inquiry. And so, you know, we were talking offset, I agree with Tom. We have a Marine who's a prosecutor. This guy is thorough. He's taking his time. It's unlike anything that we've seen before. And it will reach a conclusion here, I think, in the next several weeks, if not months.
Weeks or months.
I like the whistling past the graveyard being done by the White House that, you know, they keep saying no collusion, no Russians. Mueller's investigation.
So tired.
Oh! Russian.
Okay.
There's the doc.
We had to see one.
Collusion.
Collusion.
That was Robert Mueller. You find that you were you.
I was close.
You were using pronouns.
But he's like a stage four metastatic cancer to the whole Trump organization right now, and it's much like a metastatic cancer, it's out there and invested into cell tissue well before you realize you have it. Mueller has been very good about being low key. This is very unlike other.
There's no press conferences.
No.
There's no leaks.
Right.
Nothing seems to be coming from him.
I'm going to give you one other. And Chuck is right. He's really running this by the book. As a Marine, they have two words. It's done with honor, and we go by the code. There's one other thing. He has an engineer's mind. And engineers think about step by step by step. And when they're building something, he's got the checklist. I have a friend who is an engineer, and we do a lot of construction work together, and he's fun to work with. And he says, we always got to follow the five P's. He says six, but I'm going to make it five because we're on air. And the five P's are prior planning prevents poor performance. And everything that Mueller's done has been a plan. And by the way, a lot of the things that are outside his scope They go to the Southern District of New York. They go to the Eastern District of New York. They go to the D.C. Office.
And my guess is that a lot of this stuff, the New York State Office is getting a copy of that,
correct,
too, just in case somebody starts issuing pardons.
That's the other thing. This is, McCain famously said, this isn't just a shoe to drop. This is like a centipede. Many shoes will drop. Mm-hmm. The New York Attorney General's office is just as dangerous to the Trump organization as anybody in the Department of Justice.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a very thorough report. I think the Justice Department will be forced to redact much of that report. And I think we'll have a summertime full of hearings in D.C.
Yeah, the congressional hearings,
are going to go, and it's going to be 24-hour television news cycle, and the difficulty with the Trump administration is there is only one narrative at one time, and he will have that narrative that he will have to combat, and it will run its course.
This last week, Roger Stone got indicted, arrested. How big a piece do you think he is?
I think he's big. And with Jerome Corsi and Roger Credico, his two cohorts, the problem is multiplied for, again, the White House and Trump, because Roger Stone is
Oh, I fed you that one.
Yes.
Roger Stone is every lawyer's worst nightmare because he won't shut up. He thinks that he's got it. He can talk his way out of anything.
Yeah, he will not listen to counsel. And I believe he's been part of a lot of these Russian business transactions, mm-hmm, and was aware of a lot of those things. I mean, remember, it's Black, Manafort, and Stone. That was the name of the firm.
Yes.
You want to make a deal.
Yeah. Oh, hey, when the FBI went in, they didn't just arrest Roger. They had search warrants for his house, his studio near his house, and his apartment in New York City. They did it all simultaneously. They got terabytes of information.
We'll be back.
Terabyte.
Chuck Coughlin, Tom Ryan in just a moment in the think tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
All right, we are back with Chuck Coughlin and Tom Ryan talking all things political. A whole lot going on this week. We mostly wanted to move into Arizona these last two segments, but there's really one. I mean, we just had a government shutdown, another one on the horizon. Chuck, a question to you. Do you think that with the prospect of another government shutdown, is there a bolt in the Republican ranks among the senators? I mean, in other words, I could see it, a handful of Republican senators going, you need to get to 2/3 to override a veto. And, the Republicans in the Senate basically come back to Trump and say, this is enough. We're not going to.
I think it's a little early for that. I think it's a little early for Mitch McConnell to be pulling that card. He's as disciplined as Robert Mueller is disciplined about the process. I suspect, though, that there will be entreaties from the vice president saying, we can't do this again. I mean, that was the most awfully, awfully, terribly orchestrated political show that I've seen in a long time. He first said, I'm going to own it. Then he tried to say, I'm not going to.
I'm going to own it. That was, I think, bravado of the moment and wasn't well thought out.
Because
the normal thing you do is try to blame the other side. You undercut his ability.
And then the drag on
that.
The economy that it creates and the pain that it causes throughout for his petulance over this one issue. Whereas I think they could narrate a border security and immigration plan and bring forward something. The question I have now is, are the Democrats going to get over the tips of their skis and continue to try and push him and not give him anything, not acknowledge, and continue to politicize a situation where he's painted himself into the corner? I hope not.
Kind of they both has. He said he's drawn the gauntlet. I want a wall. Nancy Pelosi says no wall. The Democrats are saying we'll do border security.
Yeah. Let me give you a down and dirty quick analysis on Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party. Everything that the Republicans have accomplished, whether it's appointments to the Supreme Court or Court of Appeals, the tax cut, everything that they have accomplished is not because Trump wanted it. It's because Mitch McConnell wanted it.
And Trump went along with it.
And Trump.
Which is why they're sticking with him.
Right.
Because they're getting what they want.
He is useful to them to that end. The one thing I will tell you about U.S. senators is they do not like to cede their power to the presidency. And so when he is saying, when Trump is saying, border secure, funding for the wall or a shutdown again, or I'm going to declare a national emergency, they don't want him to take the power away from them. So I don't think I think that's going to be the bridge too far for Mitch McConnell. I don't see
And an executive order would be that.
Here's the crazy thing.
You're not authorizing the wall. I'm going to.
I think the
in.
Vice president's going to have a much bigger role in this next play.
Yeah. And here's the thing about the executive. First off, He's kind of blown this whole idea. I'm going to declare a national emergency. If you're going to declare a national emergency, you wait till the hurricane hits, boom, you see the damage, you go, oh my God, we just had an event that was too big and large and surprising. It is a national emergency. When you are out there saying, I have the right to call one. I have the right to call one. I have the right to call one.
Use it as a negotiating tool.
Correct. Right. That you have. It's just like he did with his Muslim ban. Everything, every tweet, every word, everything he said was used against his policy in the courts. And they said, look, we have to look at what he said and take him at his word. You don't get the Muslim ban. And same thing now with his.
I think what you're saying is you take this to court and it gets tossed in 15 minutes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
The irony that I've noted this week is that El Chapo's trial is concluding. So, you know, and that's been a result of increased enforcement and increased law enforcement cooperation with the Mexican government, the Mexican authorities. And we have extradited this guy up here. And there is an evolution that's taken place here, particularly with the new president of Mexico. And so there are things happening. And yet this narrative that the president continues to hold on is a 2009-2010 narrative. When the border was out of control. People don't remember that.
You can,
but it,
when
but
it's
we,
not now.
We, no, it's not. I mean, there's
I
still
see
problems.
The figures on that. It's dropping
250 people in Lukeville the other day that they got. And, you know, but it's also a Central American problem now. It's not. It's Central Americans and political unrest in Central America, which is a real problem for us and for our neighbors.
Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador.
But those we're not addressing it as a foreign policy problem.
The most reasonable proposal out there was the new Mexican president who said, let's have it a multinational addressing of
which
the
is what he should be doing
in the southern part of Mexico, meaning Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador.
And we should be partnering with them to address that. We're not
on a whole North American basis.
Correct. You know? No, it's not just and that's the problem is the White House has been treating it as a Honduras problem or a Guatemala problem, and even has said we're cutting funding. That's the wrong response.
My favorite line about this is always to say, yeah, we treat Central America and Mexico like a verse out of a Jimmy Buffett song when it comes to our foreign policy. It's wrong.
It is wrong, and
they're our largest trading partner. And it is in itself a sign of ethnic racism that we do not talk about that part of the world in the way that we ought to, because it is critically important to our future, our economy, and the stability, particularly the Southwest.
Okay, I want to move to statewide issues. Michelle Ugenti has put in a proposal to prohibit the dropping off of early ballots. You get an early ballot in the mail. You hold on to it past the deadline for mailing it in for whatever reason. Either you forget or you want to vote at the last minute. We've been allowed to drop those off at the polling places. She says no more.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. First off, my wife is one who gets the early ballots and she holds on to them till the last day. And she has an excellent reason. She is watching the news, and sometimes her vote changes based on information that comes out towards the end of the campaign. Sometimes there are difficult choices, but Representative Eugenti Rita is doing is solving a problem that's not a problem.
Well, the problem, I think, isn't there, aren't there most of those votes have been tilted Democratic.
Well, here's the fundamental problem is on election night in 2018, we didn't know how many ballots were in. I mean, there was an estimation that the county recorders were making of how many they had. That needs to be fixed because that's a confidence
problem. When somebody drops off the ballot, you count it.
You scan it. At least at a minimum, you could know how many ballots are in the box. You don't need to count them. If you want to count them, I've been told, that's going to be could create longer lines, et cetera, et cetera. That's an operational and that's a budget question. We should know how many ballots are in the box by the time the election's over.
That seems like not very hard to do.
And we should know who those voters are, or at least who they're claiming to be, and then be able to make some analyses based upon what's
in
the box.
Then you treat them not unlike the way you would treat them if they were mailed in.
I mean, the argument—
it is a mail-in box that's physically delivered.
The policy argument is that an early ballot is meant to be voted early. Mm-hmm. It's not an election day ballot. So if a voter then does show up on election day, they should be treated as an election day voter. Their ballot should be run through the machine. The problem, again, with that is that if they're not going to their actual precinct, where they go to the regional voting centers where many of these ballots have ended up, none of the machines, you can't have all the machines, or you could, but it's a massive engineering issue to punch in your precinct on that scanner and then run that ballot. That's going to take time.
Yep.
So at the very least, I would say I don't agree with not counting them. That's crazy. That is voter suppression. That's wrong. But for a underlying confidence in the overall political system, I believe we should at least know who's voting on election
day. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. I think that, the only thing that we've endured as a result is that it takes a while to count these. It seems to me that's a small price to pay for democracy. And we are providing voters with choices. You can mail them in. You can take them in. Hey. And the advantage of taking it in, there can be a half hour, an hour line in your precinct.
Yeah.
You got a mail-in ballot. You walk in. You hand it in. You walk away. It's no different than handing it to your postman.
I think this is an issue really of getting up to speed on technology, software design.
If you coded the precinct on the physical ballot, you have solved your problem, and those can be scanned anywhere.
But the machine would have to be reflective of that. Yeah. The machine scans it.
If you're willing to pay for that.
On my cell phone, I have a scanner, and I can walk up to any barcode and find out information about it. There's no reason why we couldn't do the same thing with our voting process.
Chuck, what do you think is going to happen with this one?
I don't, given the split in the House and the narrowness and the view in the Senate, I think the bill will end up being amended and hopefully have some thoughtful input as to what we actually end up doing to talk about the very ideas that we're having here. I don't see that bill moving forward. It will not have the support in the House.
Okay, we will be back and we will talk about taxes, the governor. And we have had a veto. I think it's the first gubernatorial veto of his term.
Yeah. I think so.
Yes.
So big deal. When we return in the think tank, we'll be back in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Hey, I can't believe our guys here. We've gone through three whole segments. We had three magic voids, really gimmies.
Hey, we got two out of three.
But these are gimmies. All right.
Well, that's because
Chuck,
we're so
who is the meanest hombre in Washington?
The meanest hombre
in Washington.
The meanest hombre in Washington is
who is?
I know, man. It's
who is she?
Well, Nancy Pelosi.
Her name was McGill, and she called herself Lil. But everyone knew her as Nancy.
She's one bad hombre.
Oh, yeah. You know why she's the bad one? Because Trump doesn't know how to instill fear in her. He always wins through fear. That's his.
Who has fear? I mean, listen, every other person in the world, he's got a nasty word for. We were talking about this before. You got Little Marco, Lion Ted, you know, long list. The worst he could come up with her was Nancy. I call her Nancy. I think the fear thing is working in the opposite direction.
Yeah, sitting in her first rodeo. Yeah.
I think when they sat down to negotiate, she understood the power dynamics, and I think he didn't think it through.
No. That's shocking, right? I mean, that would...
Well, this is, you know, she's been in Washington for that counts for a lot.
Yep.
Okay, but local politics. Governor Ducey vetoed a tax bill. Background, the federal government did tax changes. Normally, Arizona conforms to that. The relevant parts were that the federal government, in its latest tax changes, removed a number of deductions. If Arizona conforms to that, the state will get a modest bump in revenues. Governor Ducey has made two pretty absolute promises. One, I will never raise taxes. Two, he committed to the 20% teacher raise, and that includes 5% for this year. And I think he's looking at that and saying, over the long haul, it's going to be difficult to keep both promises. So there's an opportunity. Let me just finish and I'll give it to you. There's an opportunity here to kind of, you just conform this. It's really a tax increase, but it's not, first of all, it's not all that much. And it's tweaking. It's kind of like it is very much analogous to the fee for automobile registration that got bumped a little bit. In other words, it's a source of a little bit of extra revenue here and there that makes it easier for him to keep both promises.
He knows he needs revenue. Here's the issue is that tax filing behavior is undetermined because this is a new tax code. And so you don't really know the fiscal consequences of that. The hardcore fiscal conservative and anti-tax group led by Tom's state senator, J.D. Mesnard, former speaker, is insisting this is a tax increase. And they sent a bill up with all Republican votes up to him that conforms, but does not conform a tax increase to the general fund, would end up being money would be going back to the taxpayers, presumably. Now, everybody,
in other words, they cut the rates a little bit to compensate.
Everybody remember that your Arizona tax bill, as we enter tax season, is about 10% or maybe 20% of what your federal tax bill is. It's the tail on the fish that's
swimming. By the way, this increase that you get only applies to people who take deductions, which is not very many people.
Well, mostly, back to a Republican, affluent Republican audience.
The affluent are the ones most likely to take the deductions.
So the Democrat, not a single Democrat, there's not the votes to override this. They're going to have to pass a conformity bill that he agrees with that gives taxpayers a clarification that probably will end up with more revenue in the Treasury to pay, as you mentioned, teacher salaries, public safety pension funds, public safety payrolls, the types of things he outlined.
His problem, they need money, and he said, I will never raise taxes.
He didn't. Well, you'd argue that the federal government cut it, and he's greatly receiving the benefit.
There is a fig leaf. Yes. There, absolutely, and he's clutching for anyone he can get. Isn't that really what's going on here?
But one of the interesting things with the tax cuts in Arizona are our revenues have actually gone up year over year for the last two years.
Well, that's the reason he can keep the promise. But Arizona is so beholden to the sales tax. What that means is in good times, we're flush with money. In bad times, we get inordinately hit. And I think what the governor's looking at and saying, okay, I can keep the promise now. We're in good times. But if we go into any kind of a recession, We're going to be looking for money or breaking promises.
He's been very I think Governor Ducey's been very good about protecting the rainy day fund. Mm-hmm. And it's important. I mean, we've seen what happens in states, including our own, when we don't do that. We ended up selling our own buildings, our Capitol buildings, and leasing them back because we hadn't prepared for a rainy day.
We played games with the books, basically.
We did, yeah.
Well, we had to. I mean, there was we had the largest budget. There's a piece in the paper this week from Governor Brewer about that very, don't mock it, because I was there. That was a very difficult period of time.
No, I'm not mocking it.
Well, he did.
And if we get another recession, it will happen again because we're based on a volatile sales tax.
Yeah. and what, you know, his point, what, you know, his point is that he wants to put it into the rainy day fund. I don't think that's going to pass muster at the legislature either, because you have funding priorities, and that's one of the reasons I think they're going to be down there for a while this year. I'm not – it could be post-Memorial Day type session going on.
Has Kevin McCarthy and ATRA weighed in on this issue yet? I'm sure they have. I just haven't seen it.
They're the anti-tax.
Well, Arizona Tax Research Association, you know, they hold the Moses Law as it relates to the Levitical code of the state tax code. And so, you know, yes, they've weighed in, but very quietly on this matter, because a lot of their members are the biggest companies in the state, and some of them are even divided about this. They understand there's funding needs that are not being met, and they don't really need the revenue right now.
There was even a talk somewhere in the ranks. Somebody proposed, one of the legislators, I think it was a rural legislator, looking at the gas tax, which hasn't been touched since 1991.
Noel Campbell's introduced a bill. Will be heard. His ideas, as you said, Mike, it hasn't been increased since 91. This legislature, historically, to get through the recession, had to raid the HERF fund. They've continued. Mm-hmm. That's the Highway User Revenue Fund that funds local roads and local streets.
Which people, means we got potholes.
It's experiential right now. Mm-hmm. People know the conditions of the road. Well, the reason we have the conditions of the roads is we've raided that fund, and we've not increased the gas tax since 1991.
That's one of those things, kind of like with the
government. And you have alternative vehicles.
Yeah, that's what I was going to go to. Yeah, you've got all these electric vehicles on the road now, and you have hybrids on the road. Gas mileage has gone up.
And the gas tax originally was based on per gallon, not per dollar. So it didn't get any of the inflation. In effect, it's been cut every year.
Yeah. In effect, it's about 40% of the purchasing power that it was in 91, in addition to the inflationary costs of building new roads.
We got just a minute left. I got one more I want to go with you, Chuck. Kelly Ward. Could not get nominated for two runs at statewide office in Republican primaries, is elected chair of the Republican Party. How significant?
Well, I've said over the years that eventually they'll be able to have a convention in a phone booth. And so, you know, you got to have intellectual and purity on all these, you know, and it will have very little impact on the overall show.
People who are elected heard are the same folks who regularly voted to chastise Senator McCain.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Bob Robb wrote a column last week, and it was on spot with all the different – a party can do some things. The Democratic Party actually does an excellent job of voter turnout, voter ID, and door-to-door activity. But with the proliferation of C4s and other organizations and money, they will do workarounds, as they have done, as Bob pointed out, in the past. So it's not going to be that consequential.
Okay. You get the final word. Thank you very much, Tom Ryan, Chuck Coughlin. You can catch our broadcast at KTR.com anytime there's podcasts there. The older ones at MikeO'Neill.org. See you next week in the Think Tank.
Thank you, Bad Hombre.
Thank you.
Sirens call them on with a song.